when you listen to the simple reminders, the simple concepts that we're talking about here, that these actually can apply to almost everything you do. And so if you're motivated by the idea of applying this in your business or in your career, amazing. What a great place to do it, and the outcome can be phenomenal. But this same practice can be applied regardless of what you're doing, because when you come at things with this other mindset, with a what's in it for them before what's in it for me, knowing secretly that it is actually selfish, because when we give to others and we come from that place, we end up receiving so much more in the end. I'm Stephen Pesavento, and welcome to the Name Your Number podcast presented by The Investor Mindset. As someone who comes from a challenging childhood, I've spent my life seeking financial security, personal growth, and ultimately freedom. The freedom to not wake up worried about the next paycheck, but rather with the confidence of knowing that my passive income pays my bills without the need to think about it. When you name your number that you'll earn passively, that creates your ultimate quality of life, then I believe you've achieved real freedom. Welcome to my show. It's time to name your number. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm wonderful, Stephen. Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you, because I can tell we have a lot of things in common. You're very impact driven, and you're at a new place in your life where you've released this new book, Begin With We, 10 Principles for Building and Sustaining a Culture of Excellence. So we'll definitely touch on some of those principles from the book. But before we get into the things that you've learned and are applying out there in the corporate world, tell me, when you look back earlier in your life, what events or influences from your childhood shaped who you are today?
Great question. Like so many of us, I was raised, I played sports from a very early age, and I was really lucky, although I didn't realize it at the time, but I was really lucky to have a couple of parents that were hard charging, incredible work ethic. They taught me the value of a dollar and how important it is to put in the effort to see the outcome and the fruits of that effort. So I learned at a very early age that if you want this, you got to work for that. But I was quick to learn early in my kind of athletic career. It's odd calling it a career because, you know, I didn't make any money at it, but I played football throughout my childhood through high school. I realized, a lot of us just kind of go through the motions following others. You know, my favorite example is when we get off an airplane, everybody always invariably goes the same way. And sometimes we learn after about 30 yards that we're going the wrong way because the person up front just led and everybody followed. And I discovered at an early age that if you want to be someone that others look to for guidance, you can be that person. It just is a choice. You have to make the choice to allow yourself and put yourself in a position for others to follow. Now, some authenticity is required. You got to gain their trust and all those things. But I learned early on that the key to getting things done was through a team and rallying those on the team towards a common cause.
I think there's something so powerful about that, because when you grow up in an environment where you have to work with other people, you know you've got to do your own individual contribution, but it's part of something that's greater than just you as the individual. I think that's really powerful, especially in today's society where so many people are so focused on me. They're so focused on what's in it for me, how am I going to get mine, how am I going to get the promotion and grow. But yet, from a company perspective and really from a societal perspective, the more that we collaborate, work closely together, the more that we win together, the more that we win individually, which I think is a really powerful kind of foundation to build this conversation from. So one of the things that we talk about on The Investor Mindset is really about creating a great life, and money is important and relationships are important and impact's important. One of the things that I really noticed in your work is this idea of the difference between a boss versus a leader, because I've definitely seen the difference in my own life. I worked in corporate America for many years. I've been an entrepreneur for a few decades. And when you're showing up and truly leading people, things definitely are much better. So from your perspective, what's the difference and why does it matter?
Well, I think I'm quite, I am the person to tell you the difference between boss and leader, because I've been both. I spent the first 20 plus years of my 28 year career in corporate America as one hell of a boss. I was a hard charging, bang my fist on the desk, results at all costs, never shy to flex my authority on those around me. And boy, did I have it all wrong. And it was probably around year 22, 23 that I discovered I was going about it all wrong, when I started to realize the people around me who I thought had tremendous amount of respect for me, turns out they just feared me. There wasn't respect, there was fear. Mm-hmm. So for me, the way I would describe it today is, you know, let's be clear, a leader and a boss have a lot of the same responsibilities, you know, the hiring, the firing, the disciplinary things that come with leading a team, all, you know, all of those things, budget stuff. There's on a Venn diagram, there is a lot of common activities. The leader sets him or herself apart first by the fact that they care about those around them. They're not in it just for themselves, their own growth, accolades, their own title, you know, fancy corner office, those things. They care about those around them. In fact, they care about them so much, they invest more time and energy into their into others' growth and development than they do their own. And the beautiful thing that happens when we do that is, when we invest our time and energy and most of all our care into those around us, we lift them up, and they are, in most cases, better off for our efforts, which means the team is now performing and better off for our efforts. But ultimately, the spotlight shines back on the person who put that group together, who leads them, and that's the leader. So I think when you are overt and purposeful about the amount of care and investment you put in those around you, that is what separates yourself from a boss.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's counterintuitive. The thought that I believe often comes up, I know it's come up for me in the past, has been, well, I need to protect my own. When I go into this conversation, into this effort, into this negotiation, or when I am in a position to be in charge of others, I need to make sure that I get the outcome that I'm personally looking for. But the irony of it is that when you step into that leadership position and you look at, well, what is the outcome those individuals need, and how can we help them get that outcome while also delivering the company outcome, then you have people who are motivated from another frequency versus being motivated from fear. Because fear is a super powerful motivator, but fear also is a negative energy, and it doesn't propel you forward as soon as somebody's not watching.
Well, and it's not sustainable either, right? So you can bang on and beat on a team member as long as they will stick around. So it's not, especially in today's environment, the workforce today has more. We have more choices than ever. We have more options than probably in the history of mankind in terms of where we can take our talents. And I would just add this. When you reach a point in your career that when you realize the profound value and benefit that comes from prioritizing the needs of others, those that you lead in front of your own, the impact that you start to have, and let's just face it, how good it feels to have an impact and help someone along their journey is really a feeling that can only be described if you've ever felt it. Look, I led 15,000 people, my last two jobs, rather. I led more than 30,000 people collectively. There's no chance that I could have been anywhere near as successful as I was, or had the impact that I think I had, without recognizing that I was outnumbered and I needed those around me to be my best, but also to help them be their best for us to be our best.
Yeah. I mean, I've experienced that shift towards a focus on impact in my own life, and maybe we'll talk about that in a second. But for most people that are in kind of a survival mindset, they're very focused on, hey, how do I protect myself? How do I make sure I just get enough? How do I keep my role? How do I make sure the company knows that I am valuable? It can be difficult when hearing this focus on others and this focus on impact to believe that it's actually worth spending the time, the energy, the effort in investing into people, especially in a day and age where younger generations are expecting to leave a job every year. They're not expecting to stay in that career with that company for the long term. Instead, they're looking to be able to jump. And so what allowed you to make that shift personally? And what do you recommend for others to be able to step into that leader, impact-driven leader type mindset to experience what that feeling really feels like?
Yeah. Hey, man, I am not naive on this topic in that I'm certain there are members of your audience today that may not subscribe to this approach, to the we approach and the selfless approach. And I get that. And I also understand, you said a moment ago that there are those that feel kind of trapped and they're just kind of going through the motions. I get that as well. And I respect that. If you've made that decision, if you made the choice to kind of keep your head down, not kind of disturb the waters in order to keep the paycheck coming, to keep your obligations met, you are not wrong. Respect, I understand. That is one way to go about your business. It's not wrong. However, when you just like you made the choice to keep your head down and not necessarily disturb the waters, you can also make a choice to have a bigger impact than just a job. If you're in a position of authority, by the way, as you just mentioned, it doesn't make you a leader, it makes you a boss. If you're in that position of authority, choosing to have an impact much greater than just the functions required of the job is really the ground floor of leading and delivering an impact. You make that choice to say, I'm not going to look at my job as just a job. I'm going to look at my job in a way that allows me to bring the most out of others, have an impact on what it is that we're trying to get done. And oh, by the way, when members of my team are at home in the evenings having dinner with their children and significant others, they're going to talk about the way that I led that day, the way that I behaved, how I treated them. And I think those are all really important filters to think about when we decide what we want our leadership legacy to be. You know, those are two words that a lot of people don't use together, and that's leadership legacy. For me, I had a very sentinel moment that drove this transformation. Stephen, as I mentioned, I was that hard charging guy, really focused on my own growth, my own accolades, my own corner office, the fancy titles, my next bonus, all these things. But there was a moment in my career where I became so disenfranchised with the whole corporate America engine. I'd seen so much toxicity, duplicity, silo, you know, people just being really inauthentic. And let's not be naive. There are bad actors in the world. There are bad actors in corporate America where they actually view for them to win, someone else must lose. So I checked out. I had enough. This was back in 2016, 2017. I got out of a big role with one of the largest insurers in America, maybe the world at that time. And I told myself, I'm not going back into this fray unless I am given an opportunity to lead in a way that I have never led. And I want to be the leader that I've always wanted to be. And I will drive the next transformation, because there was always a theme of transformation and cultural turnaround in each of my roles, each of my stops in corporate America. Well, I had to be careful what you wish for moment. So I got a call a couple of weeks after I stepped away and said, basically was presented with an opportunity to start conversations around leading a team of 15,000 people running the Affordable Care Act and 1-800 Medicare enrollment centers. But I was told that there was some dysfunction that had to be addressed and some cultural things that needed to be cleaned up, which is, you know, was no stranger to that. I took that role, but I realized very, very early on in that role that the tenure of the leadership team that was already in place was significant, I think over a dozen years at that time. So if I were to take the Kyle approach of old, and that is to just to tell them how great I was and assure them everything was gonna be okay, I was gonna lead our team to greatness, they had heard all of those things before. In fact, the guy that had the role before me was pretty unceremoniously dismissed from the role. So they had seen this type of behavior before. But I wanted to be different. So that's when I created these principles that are now the foundation of my book, Begin With We. And these principles proceeded to change the entire makeup of this organization in terms of the results that they delivered, the leadership acumen, the growth of the leaders within that organization. And I left that organization back in 2019. And I still have regular touch points and one-on-ones with the leadership group of that team, because that's the impact that we had on each other in those days. It's a lifelong connection now.
Yeah. Well, I think I think it's really important to underline that the relevance of this conversation is absolutely 100% career and business. And yet it is as relevant in your family, in your relationships, yeah. in your partnerships, in your investments, in everything that you do in your life, that when you listen to the simple reminders, the simple concepts that we're talking about here, that these actually can apply to almost everything you do. And so if you're motivated by the idea of applying this in your business or in your career, amazing. What a great place to do it. And the outcome can be phenomenal. But this same practice can be applied regardless of what you're doing, because when you come at things with this other mindset, with a what's in it for them before what's in it for me, knowing secretly that it is actually selfish, because when we give to others and we come from that place, we end up receiving so much more in the end.
Brother, you just hit on probably the biggest unexpected byproduct of this journey that I'm on. So my book came out in late 22 and instantly became a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestseller. And I spent the year plus after that almost exclusively evangelizing the importance of these principles inside the workplace, not realizing that I was slowly starting to make them my own personal kind of manifesto for how I behave, how I treat everyone, not just those I work with, but my wife, my friends and family and other loved ones. And I'll tell you a really quick story when it cemented the impact that we can all have once we make the decision to live a principle-based life and then lead with principles in mind. I gave a talk to a major automotive manufacturer late last year. And at the end of the talk, this really athletic, big, burly guy, shaved head, kind of intimidating figure, stands up and in a group of executives says, "If you listen to what this man has to say and embrace these principles, it will change your life. Never mind the work life. It will change your life. For me, it's changed how I raise my children," he shared. I was overwhelmed. I teared up in front of this group of executives. I just sat back down on my stool behind the little podium. I said, "Guys, I got nothing else to say." So your observation, Stephen, is so spot on. There should be no separation for how we behave in the workplace versus how we behave in our personal lives if we want to be viewed as someone who was authentic. And that was something that is a point of pride for me. I never wanted to be coined as a hypocrite. So when I'm out evangelizing these principles, I have to do it in everything that I do. And that's putting that focus on everyone else around me, not just myself, regardless of the scenario.
Well, I think it's so easy to get stuck in this fear, this lack of abundance type mindset around things in your life where, you know, we've been taught, go to school, get a job, work for a 401k, hope someone else is going to take care of us. And people are waking up to realizing that they do need to take some ownership over their life. But the irony around that is that when you do take ownership and you come at it from the kind of principles that we're talking about, not only do you enjoy life more, but you make a heck of a lot more money. You know, there's a phenomenal book called The Second Mountain, which if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. And it's all about this concept of, you know, individualism versus relationshipism, the idea of community and impact. And that when you live on that other side of the when you live on the other side of that equation, that you enjoy life so much more, it's so much more fulfilling. And I think it leads into something that I'm noticing a lot in the world today, is that there's a lack of purpose. And so when you go to work and you check out and you don't care about the other people, you keep your head down, you're missing that purpose. And so you're empty inside. And we need to bring that back. And I think some of these principles is a great way to do that. So we don't have time to talk about all the principles, and I know they all build on one another, but where should we start in giving people a little taste of what some of these simple concepts can do when you package them together and follow a set of principles?
Well, I think the first step for me, and I would encourage your audience to consider this, and that was just establishing the principles in general, right? I was in a hotel room the night before I was going to meet with the top 40 or 50 leaders of that organization, and I made the choice to say, I want to know ambiguity, because I truly believe ambiguity is the enemy of progress. So if I wanted us to progress, I needed to set some guideposts. And that's what the principles are, is they set kind of boundaries for how we behave. And my rule for the team then and still today, both in my coaching business, but as well as anyone that I interact with, I guess I should say, is these principles govern how we treat each other first. That's number one. Because if we're high functioning behind the curtain, we are much better positioned to deliver excellence externally. So we've got to take care of each other behind the curtain first. If you ask me to pick any one of the 10 we's that have been the most impactful or profound for me, without question, it's we number 8, and that is we challenge each other. You hinted at it earlier, and I think we've all felt this throughout most of our careers, or at least most of us have felt it, that you know, challenges are essentially reserved for the boss, the person who is in a position of authority to say, please go do this, go do that, we're heading down this path, let's go, whatever the scenario is. Those challenges always came from high up. And I think that's limiting. There's a reason an NFL team with 53 men on the roster has one head coach and myriad number of assistant coaches and coordinators and otherwise, because one person cannot possibly bring the most and the best out of 53 other people. Corporate world and basically any team environment is no different, in that if you want to get to the best results, if you want to achieve excellence and reach new heights, challenges must come from every angle. The boss must be vulnerable enough to take challenges. Peers should challenge peers diplomatically, I always add. And a challenge must be grounded in one of two things in this world. It must be grounded in either data or experience. Otherwise, it's just your opinion, and that's not helpful. But if you have data or experience and you challenge the boss, or you challenge a peer or someone on your team to be better because of this data or experience, we should listen. We should be obligated to listen. And I think this is the principle that has been the most transformative for me, both as a leader inside of corporate America, but also my personal life. Because the connection to we number 8 and we number 9 cannot be lost. And we number 9 is we embrace challenge. And as you mentioned, if we take these things on, regardless of what sphere, our personal life, our business life, whatever, we have a much better opportunity to feel a sense of belonging, fulfillment, and passion for what we do.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that's absolutely missing in a lot of cultures, in a corporate level, let alone in social circles, is people's ability to be comfortable and accept the idea of being challenged, to be able to say, mm-hmm. Hey, you know, I didn't think about it like that. Tell me, where are you coming from there? What led you to that belief? Or why do you think this is, you know, the best way to go about it? And to say, hey, well, this is actually what I think. What do you think about that? And to be able to have a conversation, but more importantly, to be able to have a container to be able to bring up difficult things so that anybody in the organization has the ability to be able to push up those suggestions that can lead towards the numbers in the organization changing for everyone.
Yep. Well, and again, back to scale, it's like if you're leading a team of more than a couple, you are mistaken if you feel as if you know what's going on in the front line. If the higher you ascend inside of an organization, as you know, the less likely you are to have real one-to-one contact with those that purchase your services. So to not listen to those that are in those interactions and do hear from your clients on a daily basis and not take their input and be open to their challenges, I think it's just arrogance. And I think it's a really short-sighted way to lead.
So what do you suggest that leaders or organizations do to change the culture so that people do feel like they can step up, speak up, they can make mistakes, and they're going to be learned from?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It really is tough, because I'm not naive that everyone has a different scenario. We all have obligations, and there are reasons why we may not want to put our hand up to say, I'm going to lead this transformation. So the first step is really just some self-reflection and some introspection. I use what I call the mirror of truth. And the mirror of truth is really just a metaphor for me to have some quiet time to say, is this who I want to be? Is this worth where I'm going? Is this the challenge I want to take on? Is this who I want to be portrayed as? You know, really some deep introspection. And I think that is the first step, is recognizing that what I'm about to take on, if I'm going to lead this transformation or I'm going to turn around the culture of this organization, I have to know it's going to be hard. It's going to create more work for me. It's going to be difficult. And it's not a one and done. It's not a two and done. It is a journey that never, ever ends. So if you've made that decision that you have what it takes, you feel as if you are ready to drive a transformation, I think the very next step is to document your principles. What are the rules of the road? How do you want the team to engage one another? How do you want the team to engage with you? And be very explicit. There's no subliminal approach here. You've got to be very overt and specific to say, these are how we operate. And if I'm not going to operate this way, if I'm going to operate this way, you're going to operate this way. And if I'm not, I want you to call me out, because I will call you out as well. So being purposeful about the path ahead, setting those expectations for behavior for those around you, and picking people up at every chance you get when they stumble, because you want them to be in an environment where they do we number four, and that's we take action. No one's going to take action if they know they're going to get beaten over the head if they stumble or make a mistake. So you've got to create that environment that allows people to take action, but also make mistakes.
Yeah, it's really creating a culture of rewarding and celebrating the failures as long as the team is actually learning from them. That's going to lead people to being willing to take the risk, because if everyone's been, you know, their hands been slapped every time they took action and it didn't work out, they're going to start learning, hey, maybe I just shouldn't do anything. I'll just kind of hang back.
One of
the principles that I personally love and agree with is the principle around getting results, being very outcome focused. So you'll tell me exactly what the wording is on that in a second. But one of the things that I often hear from people, and I think there is a good justification to the idea of being process minded and focusing on doing the right activities and celebrating doing the right activities, because sometimes the outcome isn't always in your control. And so how do you think people can balance that, being outcome minded, yet celebrating the actions that they're taking towards getting there, even if it doesn't result in that outcome?
Boy, you framed that question really well. And of all of the 10 we's, believe it or not, this is the one I get the most, not pushback, but I've had people out and out disagree. Here's the spirit. The we is we number seven. It's we measure ourselves by outcomes, not activity. Like it or not, in the world that we're in, we are paid for outcomes. I am so thrilled that when I call for the Uber, an Uber, that the driver shows up and the car has enough fuel to get me from A to B. But I didn't pay the Uber driver to go get gas before they picked me up. I'm paying for the transportation from A to B. They had to do that activity. They had to go get gas and fill that tank up to deliver the outcome. I'm paying for the outcome. So this manifests itself more often than not in organizations that are so heavily focused on meetings. I lived it for so many years, and I'm sure members of your audience did. We are meetinged to death inside of the corporate world. We have a meeting to talk about the next meeting, and then let's have a meeting to debrief on the meeting that we just had. And in nearly every single workplace survey, I'll go as far to say every workplace survey, respondents always indicate at a very high percentage that I attend meetings that add no value to the work that I'm doing, which is a travesty. We want our teams to be focused on delivering outcomes. Yes, activity is required to deliver those outcomes, but we have to be purposeful about the activities that we're taking on and see if there's a direct line between this activity and the outcome for which I've been assigned to deliver. Said differently, if you find yourself engaged in something in the workplace that you cannot directly connect an outcome that is either something you've agreed to deliver for a client, maybe your boss or leader is expecting it, maybe it's on your annual appraisal, whatever it is, there's an expectation that this outcome be delivered. If the activity in which you are engaged does not directly contribute to that outcome, it should be scrutinized. I'm not saying you just stop doing it, but it should be scrutinized. Am I spending and making the best use of this time to get the outcomes that I expect to get? We've gotten to this place now in so many environments that we reward activity. In my coaching business, I meet with executives all the time who say they're so overwhelmed, they have meeting overload. I had an HR professional recently say, I had 13 meetings yesterday, Kyle, and she wore it like it was a badge of honor. It's not a badge of honor. I don't look at it that way. It doesn't impress me that you had 13 meetings. Tell me about the outcomes that came from those meetings. If you had them, then the meetings were necessary. But if you can't point to the ball being moved forward as a result of every single one of those meetings, I would challenge, why'd you have them? Why'd you participate?
Yeah. In the small business or medium-sized business world, outcome-driven business is the only way that these organizations can exist. But But as you grow a business, as you start layering on managers, people do start celebrating activity. And sometimes doing activity that doesn't end up leading to an outcome really isn't worth celebrating. It's worth changing, and it's worth challenging the status quo. So yeah. I think there is a place for both. There's a place to celebrate that, okay, if I'm a salesperson, I did my 100 calls, I talked to 20 people, I'm making progress. I can't necessarily control the outcome because it's a long sales cycle, but I can absolutely influence it. But at the end of the day, the results of my pay in sales is going to be connected directly to whether or not the company is going to make money. Otherwise, I don't have a role, or that company doesn't exist.
Well, you nailed it, because in that sales scenario that you mentioned, the outcome that I am chasing is a sale. I'm trying to close a deal. So the activity is directly connected to that outcome. So yeah, start dialing. Whatever activity it takes to close a deal, yeah, that is activity that you should be taking. Now, we could argue me going to a Chamber of Commerce meeting because I'm trying to find leads, that may not be the best activity. But I know that whatever it takes to land that client and close that deal, the activity should absolutely be connected to the outcome for which I've been assigned.
It's one of the things I teach my team, very outcome driven, because you know I run an investment firm. We invest in real estate and businesses. And at the end of the day, when somebody invests $100,000 or $1 million or $10 million, they're not investing for the activity that we're doing. They're interested in the outcome. They want the results. They want the money. They want the cash flow. And they want to have a good experience. And so when you can think about, well, what is the outcome? Oh, well, I want to feel good about the investment. I want to be updated on it. I want my information to come in a timely manner. I also want to get that return. All of those are outcomes that a company can measure to. And so I think it's really powerful for those who are listening who are in a role in a company to be thinking like that, because then you're actually thinking like an owner, which is going to end up allowing you to own your role and make big changes in your career.
And I'll take it a step further, man. Imagine that investment. Imagine a client has just dropped $5 million with your firm that you are now tasked with investing, whatever the engine is, and the outcome that you discussed has been kind of assigned, or at least loosely articulated. Imagine what they would do, or how they would feel or think, if they knew that you were engaged in 10 meetings the day before, or their rep, whoever's assigned to this client, right, was engaged in 10 meetings the day before, busy as all hell, but not a single one of those meetings had anything to do with that $5 million, had nothing to do with the outcomes that they would hate to hear that. Right? Customers are not impressed with the number of meetings that we have every day. Customers are impressed by the outcomes that we deliver. And that's how the world measures us. So we've got to get away. And by the way, you should know, and I'm sure you've seen this, and I know members of your audience have seen this, especially in really big companies, it's a skill to stay under the radar, to be very busy and not deliver a single thing. Now, I've worked with these people for years. Throughout most of my career, they are very good at nodding their head yes and agreeing with someone in a position of authority and not doing a single thing about it and go on to the next meeting and just not ruffle any feathers. That's soul sucking. It's mediocrity at its finest, but it's pervasive in a lot of big organizations.
Yeah, it's one of the worst things. When I hear that as a business owner, it just irks me. Not only because it hurts the business at a deep level, it slows things down and I like to move fast, but it also hurts that individual person. It's like a lot of people have kind of given up on life, and I think that's really sad, because don't be in the job if you don't enjoy it. Find something that you do care about. You know, and I know for you, you've kind of shifted gears. You run a business, you're speaking and teaching and helping other people. How has your life changed as you've stepped into that entrepreneurial type role for yourself?
Boy, it's scary. It is scary, right? So I was a W-2 guy at massive organizations for 28 years. But I felt a calling and an obligation to evangelize this work where I had seen such big transformations and the fulfillment that came with those transformations, that I felt like it was an obligation to start my own thing. So I've been at it now, this entrepreneurial journey of mine, for going on 3 years. I got to tell you, man, If you asked me to describe some of the bigger wins that I ever had inside of corporate America, you know, whether it be business accomplishments, a CRM implementation, or a merger that we completed, or, you know, whatever, I would probably take a little bit of time to find a couple of examples that I'd be really proud to share with you. But if you ask me, since I left corporate America, the impact that I feel is that I've been able to have and help others along their journey, we'd be here a long time, brother, because the list is long. And I don't say that to pat myself on the back at all. I say that to illuminate what happens when you make a choice to invest your energy and time into others. The outcome will be there. The fulfillment that comes with it is exponentially profound versus just kind of head down going through the motions. So for me, it is, I feel as if it's an obligation to do what I'm doing, which makes what I'm doing that much more exciting. Hey, remember this, man. When we all enter the workforce, I think so anyway, when we all enter the workforce, we come in with optimism. We come in with excitement. We want to make a difference. We want to have a big impact. And over time, through a variety of really good reasons, we lose that. And I think it's the leader's obligation, regardless of the setting, to reignite that passion, to reignite that excitement and optimism. And that might even mean helping someone go to another company. That could mean getting someone off of the team because they're better off somewhere else and your team is better off without them. But they still deserve an opportunity to go find that fulfillment again. We have to help each other remember that optimism and the impact that we wanted to have, instead of just going through the motions and waiting for the next paycheck.
Yeah, I think it's such a powerful example of what entrepreneurship and investing can do. That when you take ownership and you decide, hey, this is the direction I'm going to go. I'm going to take the risk. I'm going to do the hard things. I'm going to find something that I can personally connect to at a heart level and use my mind to be able to help get me there. Some amazing things can happen. This has been a great interview, Kyle. I'd love to get deeper into the entrepreneurial side, but we're at time for today. So why don't you share with the audience where they can follow you or get a copy of the book?
Yeah, thank you for that. So the book is Begin With We, 10 Principles for Building and Sustaining a Culture of Excellence. It's a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestseller. It started as a passion project. Man, we just passed the 10,000 copies sold mark, and I could not be more humbled by that. My website is pretty simple. It's KyleMcDowellInc.com, and I'm essentially on every social media platform at Kyle McDowell Inc. And I'm glad you asked how to reach me, because I don't share those social media handles for clout or followers. That's not my game. I'm here to help. And not usually a week goes by without someone reaching out, sharing their experience, sharing a problem that they're facing, or looking for guidance along their journey. And I take that very seriously, and I'm happy to reply. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to and the platform to share that.
Yeah, it was great having you on. And I think for the listeners, go out and buy a copy of this book. And when you buy it, recognize that the principles are simple, but together they make a powerful impact. And when you can share that with people on your team, you can bring everybody into the same vision that you want to set out in the world. So thank you so much, Kyle. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Today's episode is sponsored by Von Finch Capital. If you're interested in investing alongside me in the same type of real estate opportunities that I personally invest in, then head over to Von Finch Capital and join their private investor network. You can do so at vonfinch.com/invest. Join me on that next deal, and I look forward to seeing you on the inside. Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend. Head over to theinvestormindset.com to join the Insider Club, where we share tools and strategies from the top investors and entrepreneurs on how to take it to the next level. Hey, this is Steven again. Just one more thing before you take off, and that is the Insider's Newsletter. Would you enjoy getting a single email every week with some of my favorite things, including tips and strategies on how to get the most out of your life and your investments? Basically, what it is some of the coolest things that I've discovered or am pondering when it comes to life, investing, and business, delivered in a short email every week to your inbox. Easy to sign up for, easy to cancel. If you'd like to try it out, Type into your browser, investormindset.com/newsletter to get started, and you'll get the very next one.